Aroma One's Own by Virginia Woolf. The orientation of Aroma One's Own is materialistic and social, as Woolf's thesis shows. A woman must have money and a room of her own if she is to write fiction. What are the basic material and social conditions in which aesthetic achievement becomes a realistic possibility? By addressing this question, she hopes to situate the problem of women in fiction in an objective and historicized framework, in rejection of a theoretical tradition founded on the assumption that women are naturally inferior to men. Woolf's argument constantly returns to the concrete material details of the situations she describes: the food that was eaten, the money that was spent, the comfort of the accommodations, and the demands on people's time. Her strategy is designed to convince the reader of the deep relevance of these physical conditions for the possibility of intellectual and creative activity. As Woolf describes her narrator's thoughts on women in fiction, she emphasizes the role of interruptions in the reflective process. A private room is a basic requirement for creative work. The fact that women have not historically been granted space or leisure for uninterrupted thinking is, in Woolf's view, a determining factor in the history of their literary achievements. Intelligence works by wild flashes of imagination or the lightning crack of genius, insights which nevertheless take time to gestate. Yet time and time again, just as our narrator seems to be on the verge of an insight of this sort, her thinking is cut off, usually by an authority figure trying to keep her in her place. Where a man would have been given free rein, the narrator is restricted to a narrow path on the Uxbridge campus, nor is she permitted to enter the college library. These obstacles symbolize the effects of an educational culture that radically restricts the scope of a woman's intellectual exposure. Woolf identifies the fact of being denied access, whether to buildings or ideas, as another type of infringement on the freedom of the female mind. This exclusion is a more radical kind of interruption, one that disturbs not just a single thought or reverie, but the lifelong development of an individual or the historical development of an intellectual tradition. Major themes. £500 and a room of one's own. Woolf repeatedly insists upon the necessity of an inheritance that requires no obligations, and of the privacy of one's own room for the promotion of creative genius. She gives a historical argument that lack of money and privacy have prevented women from writing with genius in the past. Without money, women are slavishly dependent on men. Without privacy, constant interruptions block their creativity. Freedom of thought is hampered as women consume themselves with thoughts of gender. They write out of anger or insecurity, and such emotions make them think about themselves rather than about their subjects. Aphra Behn is the first female writer to earn her own money from writing. She paved the way for 19th-century novelists like Jane Austen, who were able to write despite the lack of privacy in their family sitting rooms. Woolf believes that contemporary female writers still generally operate out of anger or insecurity, but that in the future, with money and privacy, their minds will be freed and their genius will blossom. Coleridge's androgynous mind. Woolf adapts romantic poet Samuel Taylor Coleridge's idea that the androgynous mind is a pure vessel for thought that inspires the most objective and creative relationship with reality. Woolf does not view androgyny as asexual, but rather as a union of male and female minds, which she believes are different. She encourages this differentiation, but sees their fusion as a necessity. Both genders have a blind spot about their own and the opposite sex, and are dependent on each other to flesh out an accurate portrayal of humanity. She also contends that the sexes are dependent on each other to renew creative power. Shakespeare, for example, had this kind of androgynous mind. The aggression of men. Woolf posits that men historically belittle women as a means of asserting their own superiority. In her metaphor of a looking-glass relationship, men, threatened by the thought of losing the power, reduce women to enlarge themselves, like in a mirror. However, just as women's writing suffers from the emotions of anger and fear, men's writing suffers from this aggression and are full of prejudices. In the end, the writing revolves around them rather than around their subject. Wolfe points out that war is a greater societal byproduct of this consuming aggression and defensiveness, institutionalized sexism. Much of A Room of One's Own is dedicated to an analysis of the patriarchal English society, which has limited women's opportunity. Wolfe reflects upon how men, the only gender allowed to keep their own money, have historically fed resources back into the universities and similar institutions that helped them gain power in the first place. In contrast, the women's university, the narrator states at, had to scrap together funds when it was chartered. Wolfe compares the effect of the relative wealth of the male and female universities. The luxurious lunch at the men's college provokes pleasant intellectual banter, while the mediocre dinner at the female college hampers thought. Women are not even allowed in the library at the men's college without special permission, or to class its loan. Wolfe goes back to Elizabethan times to give a fictional historical example of sexism. Judith Shakespeare's imaginary sister of William led a tragic life of unrealized genius as society scorns her attempts to make something of her brilliant mind. Wolfe traces such obstacles against women writers through the modern day. Beyond their main treatment of money and privacy, she touches upon topics such as the masculine derogation of female books, subjects, and prose style.